He may be bad at sports, but he loves talking about them. You're listening to the Gallatin Valley Sports Show on KGVM.
Welcome to the Gallatin Valley Sports Show here on KGVM. As always, my name is Ian Laird, and you can reach us at kgvm.org or 95.9 FM on your radio dial. Also reach me on the Twitters at IanLaird3/KGVMSports. Gallatin Valley Sports Show, as always, is brought to you by Spectator Sports Bar and Grill with countless TVs. Catch all the NFL and college games. Located at 19 Ty Lane up by the MSU campus, their phone number is 587-2156. That is Spectator Sports Bar and Grill, where the tailgating continues. Lots to cover this week, including Hawks and Panthers fall in football. Cats with a big win on Gold Rush Saturday night, and a special interview with the lady that makes it all possible, all the things you see, the horses running, all those kind of awesome things, all the promotions and the pageantry, I guess you would say, of Bobcat football and all of Bobcat sports. Bethany Cordell from MSU coming up as well in this hour. But first, as always, we start with national news. In the NFL, the Lions managed to tie the Arizona Cardinals on Sunday. So at least they didn't lose, I guess. They should have won it. Matthew Stafford was very angry after the game at some of the play calls. They called a timeout on a play that he threw for about a 30-yard pass to the outside that would have secured the game, and that would have been it. The next play goes incomplete. They punt it, and the other team goes down and scores to tie the game. Goes into overtime, and they could each only get a field goal from each team, and it ends up being a tie with the Arizona Cardinals. The defense looked good for the Lions most of the game. Murray in his very first game didn't look great until the last drive. Lions seem to be good at making other teams' quarterbacks look better than they really are, and it continued on again this week. So my Lions are 0-0. They still can go undefeated on the year, so I guess there's a positive to everything. In other NFL news, Antonio Brown is still in the news. So last week, we'll go over that here in a second. This time it's because of a civil suit claiming he sexually assaulted a young lady two times between 2017 and 2018. There have been no criminal charges filed and is now in the NFL's hands pretty much to determine if Brown will play this weekend. They can put him on the NFL's exemption list, which is what a lot of people think should happen. I don't really know what to do with this part of it. The craziness that happened earlier this week of him basically calling out the Raiders and saying, cut me, I don't want to be a Raider anymore, recording Gruden's phone call that he talked to the coach and didn't tell Gruden he was recording it, and then putting that on YouTube with some awesome work, video editing and everything else. So whoever his video editor is very, very good, and that was very, very quick. The Raiders then cut him. They took away all of his salary. He'll fight that, I'm sure. He then was signed by the Patriots hours later, which isn't a shock. The Patriots seem to give everyone a second chance, and it's the Patriot way and all that garbage. But he's on the Patriots now. Now this happened. Belichick won't talk about it. Brady won't talk about it, even though Antonio Brown is staying at Brady's house with him and Gisele Bundchen until he finds a home and everything else. But we'll have to see how long that lasts with all of this stuff coming out, and we'll have to see what the NFL does. They're in a very sticky situation. It's a civil suit, not a criminal suit. Nothing has been proven. No charges have been levied. The accuser will talk to the NFL next week because she's getting married this week. And so after her wedding, she will talk to the NFL. The NFL definitely does not want this to be the story going into this weekend and their big 150 years and all that, or 100 years and all that kind of stuff. But at the same time, you can't really get rid of somebody if they haven't been accused or charged with anything. It's a civil lawsuit. So I think it's a very tough situation to be in. I think it's best if they just exempt him for now until all the facts come out, so it's not a leading thing. But it's a tough choice on both sides because nothing really has been investigated or looked at to other than just the civil suit that was filed. If you read the text messages, they're awful. They're terrible, what he sent this girl. And what he's accused of doing and what she charged him for or in the civil lawsuit brought up against him for, it's terrible. So I think probably going to have to wait another week or two, but Antonio Brown's still in the news and none of it for any of his play on the field. Moving on to NBA news in U.S., the U.S. leave the World Cup with its worst finish in a major international tournament ever, assuring the finish no better than seventh after falling to Serbia this morning, 94-89, in consolation playoff game Thursday. They say Thursday night. It was actually early this morning because they're in China. Previous worst finish for the U.S. team in 45 tournament appearance was sixth at the 2002 World Championships. The Americans, top-ranked team in the world, will finish either 7th or 8th in China, depending on the outcome of their consolation finale. That is Saturday, so really Friday night or whatever that would be. Terrible for the NBA, I guess. They had probably their third or fourth string dream team that was over there. Tatum didn't play. He got hurt, so he wasn't in it. They're already qualified for the Olympics, so that's not a big shock there or a blow there, but maybe this will bring some life into USA basketball. It's kind of been in the doldrums ever since the first and second dream teams. Nobody really wants to play. None of the main players want to go over and play. We'll see if that changes for the Olympics, because it is the Olympics and not just a World Cup championship like this one. They didn't need to win it. They've already qualified, but a very bad showing there for the NBA and for Popovich, who isn't used to losing those kind of things either. Moving on to PGA news, the PGA Tour's 2019-2020 season starts today. Yep, just 3 weeks after the last season finished. It starts today at the Military Tribute at Greenbrier. Currently, Nick Taylor is even after his first round. He shot a 70, so even par. Robbie Shelton is in first place at -8. Scott Harrington is at -6. Harold Varner is tied for third with a -5, along with Jimmy Walker. Brian Harman is at -5 as well. Nick Watney at -4. Some of the bigger names going into this one. Not a ton of the huge names. Keegan Bradley's at -3. That's a name people know. I know Bryson DeChambeau was playing in it. He finished at tied for 34th at -2. So none of the huge names in this one. You'll see some of those coming up in the future, and here in October and beginning of November is when they go over to China. Tiger Woods has already said he's going to play over there. There's like three or four tournaments in a row. So, but the PGA season, they get 3 weeks off. So all you, whiners out there thinking that you have it tough in your sport, relax a little bit. They have it way tougher than you do on that one. We will take a quick break. Once again, we have a great interview with Bethany Cordell coming up. We'll take a look at high school and college sports. Once again, we will have the Bozeman Hawks game on this Friday night here on KGVM. Pre-game starts at 6:50 with kickoff scheduled for right around 7 o'clock. Hopefully the weather will be better than it was last week, because last week it was terrible. Let's pray for that. But again, you can catch that here on KGVM. Once again, this is the Gallatin Valley Sports Show on KGVM.
He may be fat and bald, but he knows it's sports. You're listening to the Gallatin Valley Sports Show on KGVM.
Welcome back to the Gallatin Valley Sports Show here on KGVM. Once again, my name is Ian Laird. You can reach us at kgvm.org, 95.9 FM on your radio dial, or on my Twitter, at @IanLaird3/KGVM Sports as well. The Gallatin Valley Sports Show is brought to you by Spectator Sports Bar and Grill. With countless TVs, catch all the NFL and college games located at 19 Ty Lane by the MSU campus. Their phone number is 587-2156. That is Spectator Sports Bar and Grill, where the tailgating continues. Let's get right into high school sports from last week. We'll start here in Bozeman. The Hawks football team lost their first regular season game since 2017 with a 21-18 loss to Missoula Big Sky. We were also trying to figure out, while we were broadcasting the game last week, when was the last time all three Missoula teams won in the same day, and we went back about 15 years and couldn't find it, so it's been a long time since that happened. Hawks started the game with two turnovers, and then a punt was snapped over the punter's head for a safety. The Hawks did find some positives in the second half, including a 90-yard punt return for a touchdown for the Hawks. That came from Carter Ash, his second punt return for a touchdown in as many games. So very deadly back there. I wouldn't punt to him too much unless you're a Hawks fan, and then you want to see him with the ball as much as possible. 57 seconds later, the Hawks would give up a 57-yard touchdown that could not convert on fourth down to end the game inside of the Big Sky 20. So they drove it all the way down. They had a chance with 9 seconds left. The pass just out of the outreached hands of the receiver in a terrible muddy field, and that's the way it ended. The game was broadcast here on KGVM. It was a little sloppy, the game, and my broadcasting as well, to be honest. Hopefully we see a little better field this week. Again, they're going into the Field Turf Stadium, the new stadium that has Field Turf and all the goodness that comes with that here in a couple weeks for homecoming against Great Falls High. But they do have one game, home game, left before they can move into that this week against Billings Senior. Once again, that game is Friday night. You can listen to it right here on KGVM. Pre-game starts at 6:50 with 7 o'clock scheduled for the kickoff. It's supposed to be nicer weather throughout this week, so hopefully we can read the down markers, because if anybody were there, you couldn't read the names on the jerseys, the numbers on the jerseys. From the 30 to the 30, they didn't have line markers anymore. It was just one big mud field. So hopefully the Hawks can bounce back. Once again, their first loss in a regular season game since 2017. Once again, the Hawks will stay at home and take on 0-2 Billings Senior this week. So one of these teams will get off the schneid of a bad start. Hopefully it is the Hawks. Moving on to soccer, the girls' soccer, Bozeman jumped ahead early and hung on late for a 4-2 win Saturday over Billings Senior. At home, the Hawks scored all four goals in the first 42 minutes, and despite allowing some goals in the second half, the Broncos couldn't fully mount a comeback. Addie Eccleston opened the scoring. Opened the scoring off an assist from Maggie Lane in the 25th minute. Five minutes later, Murphy scored with an assist from Kylie Jones. Riley Asbell scored in the 36th minute off of a Peyton Putnam assist, and then Murphy capped the scoring as Ekstrom dished her the pass. So congratulations to the Lady Hawks as they win 4-2. The boys did about the same against Billings Senior. They will now take on West. Both teams will take on West this Saturday at 2 o'clock over in Billings. So good luck to the Hawks. Volleyball, the Hawks Spikers were taken down by Helena High in straight sets, 25-18, 25-23, and 25-15. Bozeman is now 1-2 on the year. Raddick finished with 10 kills, while Hathaway added 9, but Bozeman's 24 total kills fell well short compared to Helena's 38. Molly O'Connor led Bozeman with 15 digs, and Emma Fox recorded 22 assists, but the Bengals lean on their 16 kills from Liz Hauser to lead them to the victory. This week, the Hawks will travel to Great Falls for the Great Falls Invitational. That tourney starts Friday and goes through Saturday night. So good luck to the Hawks up there in Great Falls. Moving down to Belgrade now. Let me get my papers all organized here. Belgrade football is having not so much good success so far this season in Class AA programs. And really what they need to do is clean up the penalties if they're going to have any more success. Panthers were unable to accomplish that Friday night as they committed 8 costly penalties and a 19-0 non-conference loss to Helena High. Several of their penalties halted promising drives on a rainy night. Again, they played over in Belgrade, so it was the exact same weather we had here. They were at Jason Green Memorial Field. Belgrade was down 3-0 at the end of the first quarter after Helena's Kaven Wade booted a 32-yard field goal late in the frame. The Bengals eventually took a 10-0 lead over the Panthers at halftime and then scored on a 3-yard run to cap the lengthy drive, aiding to a personal foul from the Panthers. So again, penalties are killing Belgrade so far this year. Belgrade had a chance to cut into the lead prior to the break after driving to the Bengals' 10-yard line, but they opted to not pass or not go for the field goal, and they pass it instead on 4th-and-1. That did not work out well. It was incomplete, but a fumbled center pass on the next play doomed all of their chances for a score. This week, Belgrade will stay at home to face CMR, who is also 0-2 on the year, so someone again will get off the schneid and get their first victory of the year. Hopefully it is Belgrade. We all knew coming into this year it was going to be a tough year. I thought CMR would be a lot better than 0-2, but they're kind of getting whooped pretty good by some of these teams they're playing as well. So this should be a good game between Belgrade and CMR coming up this Friday night as well. Moving on to volleyball, Carrie Mortensen and Emma Fields combined for 21 kills and 7 blocks Tuesday for the first AA home match for Belgrade. Unfortunately, they led Butte High, or Butte High won it 25-15, 25-12, and 25-20 in a non-conference victory. Panthers are now 0-3 in the young season, so Belgrade is struggling with AA competition, but once they get used to it, I think they'll pick it back up. Moving down to Manhattan in football in a matchup of Class B's top 10 teams, Manhattan Tigers came away with a big win and a big offensive showing, just too strong up front, as the Tigers executed much better than Florence did in a 54-14 win. Garrett Weeded totaled 3 rushing touchdowns and gained 205 yards for the Tigers. Lane Velkamp added a pair of touchdowns and 182 yards on the ground and threw for another 2 touchdowns. They gained, I believe it was 487 total yards from the ground is what Manhattan gained. And so they've got a very, very good offensive and defensive line that should be interesting to watch throughout this year. Moving down to Three Forks, the Wolves fell to Powell County 33-0. Both teams struggled in the first half with wet and rainy conditions, soaked field. Again, this was in Three Forks. We all got the same weather. All three teams, or all of the teams, struggled, it looks like, except for Manhattan. They lost to Powell County. The Wardens managed to take a 6-0 lead into halftime. Powell County then scored 27 points in the second half to cruise to the victory. So we'll take another quick break right now and come back with a great interview once again with Bethany Cordell from Montana State University Athletic Department. Once again, you can reach us at kgvm.org, 95.9 FM on your radio dial, or IanLaird3/KGM Sports on the Twitter. This is the Gallatin Valley Sports Show on KGVM.
You're listening to the Gallatin Valley Sports Show on KGVM.
Welcome back to the Gallatin Valley Sports Show here on KGVM. My guest is Associate Athletic Director for Marketing, Bethany Cordell. Bethany, first off, she is the reason that we have horses that run onto the field awesomely and kick-ass horses that do all sorts of cool stuff and fireworks. So, Bethany, thank you very much for that. How are you doing today?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. So, first question for you. Because fans are crazy people, do you feel that you are the most hated person on campus at times?
You know, I really don't. I mean, obviously, in a position like this, you really open yourself up to that feedback, and, you know, that's something that I kind of just embrace. You know, if we're not going to take that feedback and listen to fans, both positive and negative, then we're never going to get better. And so, you know, sometimes, especially when I first started my career, I took a lot of that kind of stuff personally, and I'd be lying if I said I just still didn't sometimes, but at the end of the day, we all want to be better, and we all want to grow together, and part of my job is pushing us in that direction.
So, feeding off of that, so just to give somebody, the people and the listeners, a background information on you, where did you come from? I believe you're from Helena originally. What is your background and what led you to the position you're at now?
Well, first I have to correct you. I'm from East Helena, not Helena.
My bad.
I have to make sure that's nice and clear. So yeah, I grew up in Montana. I actually went to school here at MSU. I think it's really funny that I ended up working in athletics because I don't think I have an athletic bone in my body. I never played sports. Which
Welcome to
makes
the club.
Me a little bit of an anomaly. Yeah. And so, you know, I found an internship posting. I found a flyer on campus. I remember exactly where I was my freshman year. It's one of those things that just stick out. And, you know, I was always spirited. In high school, I was always in the front row at the games. I was actually our mascot for a couple of years at Helena High. And so I always knew that that was an avenue that potentially could line up with a career. And so I saw a flyer. Again, not a lot of opportunities for sports marketing in the state of Montana.
No.
But as a freshman at MSU, I was able to have an incredible opportunity to spend 3.5 years working as an undergrad here at Montana State. And so I did that, like I said, for 3.5 years under the current person in my current position, or the previous person, excuse me. And then I left for a while. I spent a season with the Seattle Mariners as a marketing intern Loved it. I'm a big Mariners fan, so it was a dream come true, but also kind of helped me realize that I wanted to focus in college athletics instead. And so I then went to Kansas State University, where I worked in their athletic department and got my MBA. And then I left and I worked for the University of California for 2 years. And then Leon came to Montana State, and I was his first hire a little over 3 years ago. So,
very nice. Well, welcome back to the state after 3 years.
Thank you.
I have some friends that actually went to Kansas State as well, and now the mind is blanking.
Really?
He used to be the head equipment manager up here. I can't think of his name. Scott Gifford. He was equipment manager when your predecessor, Drew Ingraham, was around. So first off, Drew Ingraham was terrible up here. And he's a horrible human being, and he cheats at golf.
I mean, he hired me, right? So, like, there has to be one thing.
That's the only good thing he's ever done. No, Drew, we love you. We're just kidding. So going through everything you've done, what would you say is your biggest accomplishment or thing you're the most proud of, whether it be here or at another school?
Oh, gosh, that's such a hard question. You know, I think the people in marketing, the people in my position, you know, we get a lot of the credit for these big shiny things that happen, but I think it'd be remiss if before I even show something, I didn't, you know, give some love to all of our operations staff, all of our behind-the-scenes people, my army of interns, everybody that works to make a game day or a cool promotion possible. And so I want to start by saying that. And then if I had to pick a favorite, gosh, I don't know, can I give you a couple?
Yeah, of course.
Okay.
It's an hour show. You can go nuts.
My first basketball season here, we sold out Cat Grizz men's basketball. And it was the first time the Brick Breeden had been sold out in 14 years. And that was really, really special. You know, we came here and that was one of my first goals, was to re-engage our basketball community. And I'm sure we'll talk about it later about what's to come for basketball, but to come in and to be able to feel like you can make that immediate impact and work with our team and have a sellout and have this engaging atmosphere that, you know, that football gets on the regular, and to be able to kind of spread that love with our other teams is always something that feels super special.
And we won
that's
a day
I'll remember forever. I'm sorry, go ahead.
And I think we won that game.
Yeah, we did, which is awesome. I mean, yes. Like, that was definitely one of those days where you're like, oh my gosh, literally everything went right. You know, we don't get a lot of those days around here where everything goes perfectly on production and you get the crowd you want and you win. And so it's always nice when you do get to celebrate those moments. And then I'm trying to think of a couple other ones. Our first Bobcat Basketball School Day was really cool. Last year we sold out women's basketball with it, and we've never had a women's basketball sellout at Montana State. And so to be able to be a part of providing that first one, you know, I think that we joke about this a lot, but like my two favorite words in my entire like career and in my daily life is sold out. And so we can get to that point no matter what we're doing. We're really focusing and really turning around and providing this incredible student-athlete experience, fan experience, et cetera. It's all a giant circle. And so when we can get to those two words, sold out, regardless of our sport, we're making something special happen.
So spinning off that a little bit, I grew up here in Bozeman. And it was in Montana in general when I was growing up here, and maybe when you were growing up in East Helena, not Helena.
thank you.
it was a basketball state. Basketball kind of took over football. The Grizzlies didn't have their shiny new stadium back then, and football wasn't the top dog. It was basketball. And that's kind of shifted now to where all over it's football, and basketball is kind of the second dog. How do you play with that in a marketing aspect? Do you look at like, hey, football's kind of taken care of itself, so we're going to kind of focus on basketball? Or how does that work out for you guys?
That's a really good question. You know, I don't see a single reason why we can't be both a football and a basketball school. I think we're prime in the city of Bozeman, and with the explosion on campus of how fast we're growing and how fast the community is growing, that there's absolutely no reason that we can't be both of those type of schools at the same time. And so that's certainly a focus, right, is definitely acknowledging which games and which sports need a little bit less marketing help because they are getting there on their own. And then acknowledging where you can kind of put a little bit more of your resources, whether it be time, whether it be part of your marketing budget, et cetera. And so my biggest focus really kind of overall, because I do work with all of our ticketed sports, is that there's something for everyone at Montana State. You know, not everybody wants to do a full day football experience on game day. You know, that's just not their bag. And so looking at all of these other opportunities, whether it's volleyball, track and field, men's and women's basketball, et cetera, like no matter where you fit in the community or kind of where your interests are, there's a sport for you here. And so we really focus on obviously, like I said earlier, trying to get us to sellouts and to these huge crowds for every single thing we do. But it's just as important to me that we focus on our Champs Kids Club so that we're engaging our youth, that we focus on our student marketing. We have a lot of students on campus that aren't those crazy fans that are going to go shirtless and paint their bellies for football games, but they enjoy watching, the sport of volleyball or basketball. And so kind of making sure, again, that we're creating an opportunity for all different types of people to come experience Bobcat Athletics is really, at the end of the day, our main goal.
So first game, we'll get back to football just because that's what just happened. Game was last week, of course, for Gold Rush. Interesting side note, I see where Western Illinois is doing a Gold Rush of their own this week. So all you fans out there can just wear your gold shirts to the game and the cats won't know any different, which is odd to me. But anyway, so the first game, have you slept at all since August, the beginning of August?
Oh, gosh. I think I stopped sleeping about mid-July. I was joking with somebody about this earlier. You know, you're just the summer is just as busy, leading into football season. It's a different kind of busy. You have a little bit more freedom with your evenings and weekends, but you know, you're planning ahead. And so once you get into August, gosh, I mean, everybody here, you know, not just me, our entire team, we're, up and sending emails at 5 a.m. and we're here till, late at night rolling t-shirts and, really just all hands on deck as we approach the first football season. And so we put so much work and effort and ideas and creativity and planning into our football games. And so, I've been saying all summer, we just need to get to kickoff. Like as soon as we kick off Gold Rush, it's this, all right, we're here. We're going to help the team win a game. And it's almost the reward for what we do. You know, football game days are stressful enough for me that I wouldn't go as far to say that I particularly enjoy them. But you get to that point where you are, you're sitting up there. I got to sit, the fifth level booth and in my little glass box and kind of orchestrate what's happening off the field and be able to see the impact of that. Know that if I say like, hey, music kid, let's play, Sweet Caroline right now, that I know exactly what impact that's going to have on the fans or calling for a noise meter or anything like that. And so that honestly is like my favorite part of my job is really kind of getting to that point where you're crafting every single thing we do. And I don't think fans realize this a lot. Every single thing we do in that stadium from the second doors open to when the stadium is cleared is very intentional, whether it's music, whether it's the video board, the band, et cetera. And so kind of getting to finally see all of that come together is honestly just magical. It's cheesy, but I love it.
Well, and half the fans, according to Bobcat Nation, hate Sweet Caroline, even though 19,000 people sing it. So I don't know how anybody
right.
can like, oh, I hate that song. Like, well, then four of you don't sing it. Relax.
Right. Exactly.
So overall, then, how would you say, so the first game's under or out of the way for the year, how would you say you and your staff, how did you feel about that game? How do you think it went?
From a production standpoint, I think it went really well. Obviously, we won the game, which is always at the end of the day, what we're all trying to do, what we're all working towards. And so that always, makes it a little bit easier. One of the things that I do with my staff is we all get together at the end of the game. We usually start this about a half an hour at the conclusion of the game. And we literally stand around in the circle, meet for an hour, hour and a half.
And then drink
which
at spectators.
Some of my students probably hate me for because we're doing this, late into the night, especially on the night games. But we have a full debrief before anybody leaves the stadium as to what, how that game went. And so we start with just kind of like a general, pep talk, for lack of a better phrase, from me and kind of just an overall, observation of how the game went. And then we literally go around the circle. Gosh, we're probably at 15 to 16 people at this point that are saying one thing they thought that went really well and one thing they thought we can improve on. And so we take those notes really seriously and we look at them for the next week and how we can adapt. I like to think that most things that that we are working on fixing were things that weren't necessarily noticeable by fans. Obviously, there's always a couple. There's a few things pregame, timing-wise, you're always a little bit trying to figure things out and be better. But overall, I think I gave us a B+, actually. I usually grade us.
Wow.
I think I gave us a B+. And I'm a pretty tough grader, so.
Yeah, because I didn't think anything other than Sweet Caroline playing. I thought it all went really, really well. See, our friends and I do that same thing, but it's at spectators after the game. And so we always sit down and see how it went as well.
I'm sure we get some great candid fan feedback if we moved our meeting to spectators.
Oh, God, you don't need any more.
I don't think I do.
No. Speaking of that, you seem like you are some kind of a masochist because you did post on Bobcat Nation saying, hey, what does everyone think? Which I was like, oh, wow, she must really hate herself or like love getting yelled at. I don't know why you would do that. I know fans are important, but does it get old at times? Like, I get it. Relax.
Well, it's funny because, like, I mean, like I said in one of the first questions, you know, like I can't get better unless I know what areas we can improve on. And so, you know, I do actively choose to put myself kind of more in that public role where, you know, I do put myself out there to interact with fans, whether it's on Bobcat Nation or regular radio shows that we're doing and stuff like that. Like I want that feedback. And so, and then essentially it's my job at that point to take it and sift through it and see what we can actually act on. One of the things that we've started this year too is a post-game fan survey. I just checked like a half an hour ago. We already had over 500 people submit that, which is great.
Wow.
So we get, you know, the first time we've done that survey and to be able to look through that feedback. And really what I'm looking for overall is trends, right? Like I know there's always going to be people that are angry about this or that, but if there starts to be, you know, a large number of people that are saying something about a certain topic, whether it be music, whether it be a flooding issue in the bathroom or really anything, like we can't, like I'm stuck in my little glass box on game days. And so like I don't have the opportunity, as much as I would love to go sit, you know, let me sit in the middle of section 109 or the top row of the end zone and experience game day from a fan's perspective. And so I'm actively seeking that feedback so that we can make those improvements. And then that, we also, too, kind of in that same note, looking at trends of things that we can't change. Like replays is something that comes up all the time. They want to see more replays on the board. And, you know, I don't think a lot of people know that we're, like, very strictly regulated by the conference of how we can show replays. And so that's something that's really important to me. Same with music. Like, we actually got a music warning last game from the refs because we were playing too close to the snap on defense. And so it's this delicate balance, right, of wanting to give ourselves the best absolute home field advantage and push it right to the edge of the regulations, but also knowing that I certainly don't want to be on the other end of a conversation with Coach Choate when we get a flag, a penalty for playing music too late, you know.
No, and so, you do not.
Long story short, you know, that feedback is so, so, so important because we can't see it from everybody's eyes, but at the end of the day, you know, it's our role to kind of sift through that, see where we can make a change and where we can make an impact. And kind of go from there.
You know, I've actually watched you as we're going to go into basketball here in a second, but I've watched you at a basketball game that I was at. My kids were a part of the kids crew before the game that hands the basketballs and then they mop up or whatever afterwards. And just so you all know, Bethany's not kidding when she says she watches very little of the game. She is so busy running around and doing all sorts of crazy things and talking on her headset and doing everything. I couldn't even tell if you knew what was going on in the game just because of how busy you were. So it's unbelievable the amount of things that are going on, not just before the game, but what you have to do during the game as well.
Oh, totally. And I mean, there are so many people like that too. And I rely so much on a lot of ears on the field, you know, with my staff down there and stuff like that, because it's interesting because you're producing this whole show while also trying to watch the game, because it's also really important. For example, like kind of at its most simple at football games, for example, I'm trying to get the crowd incredibly loud on defense and I'm trying to quiet the crowd on offense. And so like I also have to be incredibly aware of what's going on in the game at the same time that I'm trying to call what goes on the video board and what music we use and when the band is about to go and which recognition is staged where in front of which camera. And so it is a million different pieces going a million miles an hour, and I absolutely couldn't do it without our awesome crew.
Once again, we're with Associate AD of Marketing Bethany Cordell. Bethany, to kind of wrap up before we get to the rapid fire questions, I don't know if you've heard, but we do have a new head men's basketball coach. how do you work closely with your staff and them on what they kind of want to see for anything? Do you work hand in hand, or is it pretty much just you're left up to do what you think is best?
That's a great question. Really, with all of our coaches, that's one of the things that I really pride myself on, is making sure that I do build these relationships with our head coaches, and so that we have the opportunity to sit down and say, all right, Danny, like, what are your expectations? And so, you know, I work really closely with him. I mean, he called me out in his introductory press conference about how I was going to get sick of him because he had so many awesome marketing ideas, and he wasn't kidding. I mean, the guy a couple weeks ago went on a dunk tank at the 50-yard line to interact with our freshmen at a big block party we had thrown. And so I love working with coaches like him, which all of ours are, where they are willing to be interactive. Because at the end of the day, I can put together this really great, you know, in flashy, shiny marketing advertising campaign to get people to come. But in a community like Bozeman, in a state like Montana, if they don't feel that connection to the coaches and to the student athletes, our fans aren't going to come. You know, they want to come to Danny's game. They don't want to come to the Bobcat men's basketball game. They want to come to Harry's game because they met him in class. So It's kind of my job to help put our coaches and our student athletes in these positions, kind of force some interaction sometimes and say, like, hey, these are the things that I think are going to make a big impact, whether it's marketing on the front end to get butts and seats, and then kind of taking it from there, our staff does, as far as the entertainment value. And so, of course, we sit down with coaches and kind of picture what they want, like, how do you want to do your starting lineup? Like, what are we going to do to jazz it up this year? What are our different theme nights going to be? And so I take all that feedback and then work with my crew to kind of just expand from there and make sure that we know, for example, which games, you know, that they really, really want the big crowds for. So we will put more effort into, for example, like our biggest non-conference game, we're hosting SDSU in December for men's basketball. Our women's basketball team is hosting Gonzaga, which is huge.
That's a huge game.
You know, working with the coaches on, you know, identifying those games that home court advantage is ever more critical.
Okay, so rapid fire, just to wrap it up, we've asked Tom DeMaco, Nico Harrison, Joey Thomas was on the show. We asked him all the same questions, Wes Holmquist from the Hawks, you name it. So the first one is a hot dog considered a sandwich?
Oh, gosh. Yeah, I think it is.
You're the only one.
I think it's a sandwich.
You're the very first one to say it. Everyone else, Joey Thomas almost hung up on me for even asking it. So,
God, that's hilarious.
Good. So we've got one hot dog is a sandwich. My son also says it's a sandwich, and I almost disown him.
Oh, so, good. I'm glad I'm in good company.
There you go. Should an adult male or female or an adult human drink milk?
Drink milk, yeah. Your bones still need calcium. I don't like milk, so I'm not going to drink it. But, yeah, totally.
So spawning off of that,
I have a friend that goes to a bar and opens or orders a glass of milk instead of a beer. Like, it's a thing.
Oh. Now, I don't know if I take it that far. I love milk, but I don't even know if I do that. That seems odd. I should try it, though. I'd probably be way more personable. So your drink of choice, then. So you had a long day. The cats kicked the crap out of SEMO. Production went great. Horses didn't poop on the field. Everything went amazing. Fireworks went off. It was all great. You finally get done with your post-game wrap-up and everything else. What is your drink of choice that you sit down and you're like, okay, nice, relaxed, I can have this?
It's a glass of Cabernet every day. I mean, not every day, but that would be my answer to the end of that all the time. Like, just a nice glass of red wine, man.
Well, they say two glasses of wine a day is actually healthy. So you can do it every day.
See?
Don't be ashamed.
That's true. Okay.
don't be ashamed. If it was like a fifth of Fireball a day, then I would be a little worried. Then I'd be like, okay, well, you know, only some of us can do that. Bethany, once again, thank you very much. We were talking earlier. You are heading down to the Western Illinois game. We have Norfolk State, I believe, is our next home game. Any surprises? One last thing. I didn't ask you this in the pre-taping or pre-show of this. Is there any surprises that the Bobcat fans can look at, either for the football coming up or maybe even basketball, that you can give away?
Well, as I say, it wouldn't be a surprise if I could give away. So I'm gonna be nice and tight-lipped and tell you guys that you should probably be at homecoming. You should probably be at Cat Grizz.
Well,
all of our other games as well, too.
And all those, too, yeah.
We've got some special stuff for those ones as well, too. And the Norfolk State, just going to plug this real quick, it's also our Stripe the Stadium game, so make sure you check what color you're supposed to wear.
And I think those are on the tickets this year.
They are. So it's printed on the ticket. You can find the map online, too, if you bought tickets after the season tickets were printed.
All right, well, Bethany, thank you very much for coming on. Good luck down at Western Illinois. Good luck the rest of the year. We do really appreciate everything you do. One of the things that I've noticed growing up here is just how amazing the climb has been for football and basketball, both, and all the sports, but how the marketing has increased, the tailgating has been better, the atmosphere itself, and you're a huge, huge part of that, and so is your team. So thank you very much for everything you do, and as always, go Cats.
Absolutely. Thanks, Ian. Go Cats.
That was Bethany Cordell. We were going to take a quick break, but I realized that we've only got about 10 minutes left in the show. So we're going to keep it right here, go straight into that game that we were just talking about with her. The big Gold Rush win for the Cats. They destroyed SEMO in the second half. Once again, this is the Gallatin Valley Sports Show on KGVM. My name is Ian Laird. You can reach us at KGVM.org. Or 95.9 FM on your radio dial. Bobcats, once again, came away with a huge victory at home last week with a dominating third quarter Saturday night, pulling away from Southeast Missouri State, 38-17. They were tied at 10-10 at halftime, which was a bizarre way to end the game, a Hail Mary, and they call roughing the passer on Sterk. He didn't somewhat agree with it, but some fans said, yeah, it was. They end up kicking a 55-yard field goal because of that to tied up, and then the Cats scored on their first four possessions of the third quarter to blow it away. Did not let the SEMO team score again till late in the game when it was pretty much over. Anyway, so we'll take a quick look at the good, the bad, and the ugly from last game. The good, and there's a ton of it. The second half, of course, was great. Cats came away on fire in the second half, scoring again, like I said, on four straight possessions. Offensive output, by many players, I think, is the number two good about the last game. Cats used Logan Jones, Tucker the third out of Great Falls. Hasse, a freshman out of Texas, scored, a true freshman, and then Anderson in the fourth score of the third quarter also scored as well, his second touchdown of the game. So it was great to see all of those different players score, and they all didn't score in the same way. Jones's was a huge 50-plus yard shovel pass run. Anderson was set up after a great pass down from Casey Bauman down towards the end zone. And then he came up and finished it off. Another one of the scores, I believe, is the Tucker score, or the Hasse score, I think is what it was actually, was set up by a huge 60-yard run by Infante. So all of these things contributed to that and made it. And so that's the way you see this offense. You're not going to have a quarterback all the time lined up in the back. You might have what they call a wishbone in the background or in the backfield at times as well. A lot of different options for the Cats and a lot of things they can do on offense. It's going to make it very tough for any defense to try to figure that out. They were actually hiding who they were coming in. They were huddling on the sideline and then running out. At the starting of possessions, it made SEMO call a couple timeouts. So that was great to see. So a lot of that options on offense is great. The last one for the goods, and there was a lot more than this, but these are the four main ones. The defensive front was lights out all night. Sterk and company forced the possessions all game long. They had a great line up front. Sterk was named co-defensive player of the week in the FBS or FCS, excuse me. So that was a great thing. And in the Big Sky, I believe some Grizzly One special teams player should have been our punter because he kicked a couple out at about the 5-yard line, put him way back. So great overall defensive front, though, for the Cats, and that includes the linebackers played great. Their quarterback was no joke. He's a very, very good quarterback, and he can sling it around like crazy. So for the Cats to be able to make him skittish as a senior and as a leader for SEMO was a great thing. They had a very, very tough time blocking anybody up front. So the defensive line was great. Now moving on to the bad. Again, not a ton here, but it is called good, bad, and ugly, so I got to pick some bad as well. First, I will say, and again, not a ton of bads, but the secondary gave up some big plays and seemed like they were a step or two behind. They did. Filer did not play because he was injured, so they had some younger guys in there. But one of the first, or the first SEMO touchdown that put them close to us, I think it was 10-0, and that put it at 10-7. There were two secondary guys right there. Both of them turned around and just watched the ball go in between them, right to the wide receiver who was standing about 3 yards behind him. So two guys were covering that guy, and it's just a mental lapse there where one of them should have been able to jump that pretty easily. Again, this is coming from a fat idiot like myself, but I think they played okay, but I don't think they played great. And coming up in the future, you're going to have to hopefully wrangle that in. It did help that the defensive line was so good. It didn't give the other team a lot of chances to throw it downfield, but if you get a team that can block us somehow, you're going to have to be able to stay on your man or they're going to pick you apart. The last thing on the bads was the personal fouls. Cats had at least four personal fouls in the game, unsportsmanlike conducts in the game. It didn't cost them too much, One of them was at the one-yard line by Kevin Cassis. All he did was wipe his chest off like he was dirty, but they called it on him. I think they thought he made some other kind of gesture. But that was on the two-yard line, and it marched all the way back. It should have been marched back 15 yards from there. What they did is they just put it on about the 12-yard line, so it was like a 10-yard penalty. I don't know how that worked. I think the refs messed that up, but we'll get into that in the ugly. But those are things you need to clean up. You can't have those personal fouls, especially when you're deep in the other team's territory, and that pushes you out of long field goal range. We missed one because of one of these penalties. You can't hope that the offense can just spring back and Trey Anderson's going to run 40 yards every time he touches the ball, even though he does. So those are things they're going to have to clean up, I think, in the upcoming games. Those are the only two bad I have. The ugly, I think, was the refs. Missed spots, personal fouls that weren't marked off 15 yards, horrible spotting of the ball on times where it looked like a runner was down a good yard or two ahead. And this is for both teams. This isn't just for the Cats. Ahead and they'd mark it back. Other ones where it looked like they were a yard and a half short and all of a sudden it was a first down without any explanation. There was a fumble in the first quarter that looked like it was clearly a fumble that was never reviewed. So those are things. The big sky is terrible and always has been. It seems horrible with its officials. They've struggled with that for years. So that's just something that comes with being in the big sky every time in the playoffs. You can't have your own conferences refs at a playoff game, so somebody else gets the big sky, and that's the one thing you hear from every one of those games is, wow, whoever those refs are from were the worst that we've seen all year. And you're welcome, they're from the big sky. So again, me ranting about it on a tiny little radio show in Bozeman, Montana isn't going to do anything about it, but hopefully someday that'll get cleared up. Now moving on, so that game is done. Now they have Western Illinois, team that is 0-2 on the year, has not won yet. They played them last year, and it was a very, very close game. Let's take a quick look at Western Illinois so far. Their 2019 record, again, they have lost their first two games against Northern Alabama, who the Grizzlies just clobbered over in Missoula. They also lost to Colorado State, but that was a little closer than people thought. 2018, they were 5-6 and 4-4 in the Missouri Valley Conference. They did lose to the Cats 26-23 at home last year. Western Illinois is just two teams with South Dakota, stand at 0-2 so far this year. They were picked to finish 8th out of 10 teams. The Cats were picked to finish 5th in the Big Sky out of 13. So everything you look at here looks like the Cats should be the better team. Montana State comes in ranked 10th in the country in Stats FCS poll. The first time the Cats have been in the top 10 ranked since 2014. So you look at this as kind of like, well, what? How could this really go bad? The Cats should be able to go there and everything else. But there are some things the Cats need to do to make sure they have a victory. Number one is keep the offense rolling. Believe in Casey Bauman a little more than I think they did in the last game. I think we got a little scared when he overthrew a couple receivers right off the bat and we threw Troy out there. Maybe we didn't, but it seemed like he needs to get more in a rhythm. His passes are almost there. A yard or two long on a 40-yarder or across a field. He had one that was a great pass. It was incomplete, but he scrambled to his left. He's a right-hander. And then stopped right at the sideline and gunned it as hard as he could. A good 40 yards down the field, but also 20 yards from left to right. And just missed a diving or a sliding Logan Jones that could have had a touchdown there because he was wide open. Those are the kind of plays that you want to see him. He's always looking downfield. He's not looking to run it like a lot of the other quarterbacks will. So I think have some faith in him. The offense in general, make sure that you have that same kind of productivity. It doesn't matter, I guess, who it comes from, but you need those runners to go. You need to have those passes in there to keep everybody honest. If they pack the box, you need to make them pay. And that's one thing that they need to do against Western Illinois to have this be successful. Number two, of course, like always, get after the quarterback. You see that we can do that. Western Illinois has a very young quarterback. He's only started, this will be his third start, even though he's a junior, his third ever start. His first two games of this year. They lost 9 players in key positions. They lost 22 overall seniors last year, did Western Illinois, and 9 of them were what you would call talent players, the wide receivers, your running backs, your quarterback, some of those kind of positions. 9 of them on the offense they lost. So he's a young guy. You need to get after him early and often. Get pressure. Make him jittery, kind of like the quarterback was for SEMO last week. You're on the road, so that's going to take the crowd, depending on how big it is, out of the game, but that's going to be huge. Secondary needs to step up on the road. They need to show why they are considered one of the best in the country. Coming into this year, that was what everybody thought, is the Cats defensive and their secondary is awesome. How will their their defensive line work? We don't know. We've already shown their linebackers and defensive line have been playing great these first couple games. Now we need that secondary to step up as well. We had one interception. I would hope for at least one more than that next week. Two interceptions, maybe a forced fumble, but the secondary to shut them down, especially if the quarterback, we can't get to the quarterback, is very important that they can do that. And finally, the last step to the Cats winning, don't let the crowd distract you. And when you normally say that, it's because it's a huge crowd. Well, the Cats are used to playing in front of 18,000 screaming, awesome Bobcat fans. There might be 5,000 at this game. So the crowd, or lack thereof, is sometimes an issue. It can feel kind of dead in the stadium, and wow, there's no life in here or anything. So they need to make sure that they get that back and pump themselves up or whatever they need to do, because in front of 5,000 all gold wearing fans, which is weird they would pick the game after Gold Rush for their team to wear, or their fans to wear all gold, but basically like you're at home. But that could be awkward and be a difference. So they need to be able to fight through the lack of crowd noise. Sometimes even the road fans get you pumped up because of how loud they are. They need to fight through that and make sure they can stay pumped up themselves. So my prediction for this week, my heart says Cats come out on fire and bury the Leathernecks early and cruise to a 38-10 victory. My head says the same. I just don't see the Cats not blowing this open early, and I think the Cats end up winning it 38-10 convincingly, running away with it. Hopefully Casey can get a little more agile and everything else. So once again, that was our show for this week. I picked the Cats to win 38-10. We will be back Friday night for the Hawks game versus Billings Senior. Pregame starts at 6:50 with kickoff scheduled at 7. Once again, make sure you tune in to KGVM.org or 95.9 FM on your radio dial for that. So thank you all for listening. Once again, the Hawks play Billings Senior. The Panthers play CMR at home. Some great games out in Manhattan and Three Forks. Should be a great week of sports. Bobcats, of course, big game on the road. Their second game on the road of the first three games they've played. Only one home game. They will be at home the next week against Norfolk State. So take a look for that. Once again, that's my show. Thank you all for listening very much, and enjoy your weekend. Go Cats!